This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
You're about to listen to part two of Duncan Campbell's dialogue with John Gray, author most recently of Why Mars and Venus Collide. Right after the introduction of John in the dialogue, we pick up where we left off at the end of part one.
This is a fantastic interview. Like you said, this would be an exploration, a discovery process. And throughout this interview, I've been challenged to expand my awareness and think in a more enriched way. And I'm appreciative that you created a platform for me to share many of the ideas. Two is you really do your homework, and I appreciate that. And three, you enrich the whole interview by bringing forth your wealth of knowledge as a sharing together. So thank you very much.
From time immemorial, beginning with indigenous councils and ancient wisdom traditions, through the work of Western visionaries such as Plato, Galileo, and quantum physicist David Bohm, mutually participatory dialogue has been seen as the key to evolving and transforming consciousness, evoking a flow of meaning, a Daya flow of logos, meaning, beyond what any one individual can bring through alone. So join us now, as together with you, the active deep listener, we evoke and engage in living dialogues. Welcome to Living Dialogues. I'm your host, Duncan Campbell, and with me for this particular dialogue, I'm truly delighted to have as my guest, John Gray, author most recently of the New York Times bestseller, Why Mars and Venus Collide, an internationally recognized expert in the fields of communication and relationships, and the author of 15 books. John Gray was a certified family therapist for over 15 years and has been conducting personal growth seminars for over 30 years. His watershed book, Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus, was recognized by USA Today as the best-selling book of the 1990s. Translated into more than 40 languages, this phenomenal book has helped millions of men and women transform their relationships. He has appeared on Oprah, The Today Show, CBS Morning Show, Good Morning America, The View, Politically Incorrect, and Larry King, and has been profiled in Newsweek, Time, Forbes, USA Today, People Magazine, among others. His Mars Venus Advice weekly syndicated column for Tribune Media Services has appeared in more than 100 media outlets, and he also has a thriving website and an ongoing newsletter with thousands of subscribers, www.marsvenus/collide.com and www.marsvenuswellness.com. And so, John, what a delight to have you here on Living Dialogues.
It's a real pleasure for me to be here.
You say one of the problems women have is accurately interpreting a man's feelings. For example, he looks frustrated and she thinks he's not interested in what she's saying. In truth, he's simply trying to make sense of what she is saying in this other language so that he can be of help and help her solve her problem. She is correct in noticing his frustration, but her interpretation would be completely off the mark.
That's exactly right. The whole key is she may feel his feeling, she may know what he's feeling, but why he's feeling that, she can be completely off the mark, and quite often is, because we have such different perspectives in life.
And you say that much like Deborah Tannen in her wonderful books about You Just Don't Understand, that men and women, she says, speak a different language. They might as well, as you put it, beyond Mars and Venus. And so your book is really this wonderful bridging ability to have fun learning another language. So let's talk now about how men can get hip to what women really want. You know, here's Freud, the great 19th century genius discovery of psychoanalysis and so on. And he says, finally, love and work, that's what motivates us. But what do women want?
Yeah, he had no clue.
He never found out in his life.
A lot of men have no clue. Yeah. I mean, usually you'll find a guy around 3 years in a marriage. At the beginning, he thinks he knows. But around 3 years in, at a certain point, he goes, I can't make sense of it. I don't know. What is it? Yeah. What is it? And one of my ways, many ways to explain that, one of them is when I talk about the biological way would be to look at testosterone and oxytocin. And so when a man achieves something big, like you do something really big, that's going to create a lot of well-being in his body.
He's just finished a big project at work.
Exactly. He's overcome a challenge, accomplished something, done something, feel on top of the world. It's because it's stimulated testosterone. So do something big, you feel really good. So a guy will do something big for his wife. Say, I plan a vacation, and that's really big. Or let's say I want to create romance, and I bring her a dozen roses. That's really big. To me, translating it into scoring system, big, little. Yeah. That's worth 30 points, okay? Or 24 roses, 24 points. But in terms of producing oxytocin, not talking testosterone, we're talking about oxytocin. The way that oxytocin hormone works is that every act of love, every gift of love scores equal to every other gift of love. Because it's kind of like back when my mother said, it's not the present that counts, it's the intention behind it. You know, and just if you have a loving intent, that's what stimulates oxytocin. Not so much how expensive it was or how big it is or how long lasting it is. It's that you had that intent to be of service and cared and were considerate. So you can bring two dozen roses, that's 24 points in a man's mind, but what you find out is it's really just one or two on her planet. So if you want to get all those points and you're on a budget, then bring her one rose every week and you'll get those 24 points. If you think you can just suddenly do a big thing and it will last for months, it doesn't work that way. And this helps men understand it because so many times I would counsel men, and they would say to me, look, no matter what I do, it's never enough to make her happy. And what they're meaning is I do the big stuff and it's not enough to make her happy. Mm-hmm. When the big stuff is a part of it, but it's the little stuff that actually lowers the stress for women when you're consistently showing little acts of affection, a hug here, a compliment there, a plan a date here, all the little things that often men don't do. Men don't do them because when women do it for us, it's not a big deal. A case in point, you'll read in a lot of the romantic books, you know, how to create romance. Leave little notes that say, I love you. Okay. If my wife leaves a little note that says, I love you, that's very sweet. But it's not like going to blow me out. But if I leave a little note under my wife's pillow and I leave and she looks at it, she goes, oh, so wonderful. That's what creates the oxytocin to keep her stress levels down. So a lot of the things women do for men are the things that women would like men to do for women. And when women do it for men, men have the experience of that's not so important. So then men don't reciprocate because that's not what's important to a man.
And a man feels like he has to make a difference, and he's been educated and schooled to think that making a difference means doing something big.
And that's our culture. And that is
a big deal.
That is a neurosis in our culture,
too. It is, yeah.
I mean, that is a big problem. And women's love can help transform that.
Yeah, and here's what I think is so great on this. You say, a married man gets 1 point in the woman's scoring system for going to work, he gets 1 point for returning, and 1 point for being faithful. These are the three golden points. Without these, he gets no other points. These 3 points give him the keys to her heart, but it is doing the little things that open the door. And oftentimes, the guy thinks that he does these 3 things. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I go to work. I come home. I'm faithful. You got these other guys out there. They don't come home. They're running around. I mean, hey, you know, I think I should. Yeah, exactly. I think you should really be appreciative of who I am and I love you. And of course, the mere fact that I do these 3 things means that I really love you and I'm committed. So I take it for granted. I don't really need to say it. But then you say, when you saw the difference of the importance of the little things to doing the oxytocin as opposed to the big things for the testosterone, you said, when I discovered this scoring system, I began giving my wife 4 hugs a day. One, I see her in the morning. The first thing, I give her a hug. When I say goodbye, I give her a hug. I give her another one when I return and one before bed. By finding her to give the hugs, I get an extra point each time for finding her. So I score 8 points just by giving her 4 hugs. By showing some interest and asking a few questions about her day, I can easily earn another 10 points. Every time I ask about something with an awareness of what she is doing, I score a point. A man gets more points when his questions are specific. Rather than saying, how is your day? He asks, did you get what you wanted at the marketing meeting? That shows real involvement. Every time you listen, simply listen and don't interrupt to try to solve what you think is the problem she wants you to solve, rather than just that she wants you to listen to her, you score another raft of points, you know? So when you get onto the scoring system, you say, you see how easy it is for both parties to actually express this deep love and appreciation that they feel for the other, but sometimes don't express because they withdraw because they either feel alone or not appreciated or not seen. And it's just because they haven't really seen that they both respond to stress in a different way, both hormonally and also in terms of brain chemistry. And that gives birth to certain habits of how we deal with stress. And it's just, it's like a totally remarkable set of discoveries that you've made here, that we think we know these things, but actually we can learn new tricks even if we're old dogs.
Exactly. And it's really reframing things. It's putting everything in a different context. And sometimes people hear the little point system and they go, well, gee, it sounds now like it's a game you're playing and you're just trying to score points. And I say, no, it's just a context to understand the importance of little things make a big difference. Otherwise, here you have me, this completely loving husband, who'd be willing to give my life in an instant if I thought it would save my wife or my children in any way. Totally there, and willing to go out and do whatever I can to make their life better, doing the big things. And then I used to come home and do nothing, you know, unless asked to do things. And now I realize all these little things is what has built up this wonderful relationship where my wife, she feels that I know who she is and I know what she's doing in the day, and I have a sense of empathy for what goes on in her life. And most men don't even know what their wives do during the day, and they may think they do, but the wives know they don't, because the wives know they don't even tell their partner about their experiences. You know, there's a part of the book which I talk about, the Venus Talks, where a woman kind of just downloads her day to her boyfriend or husband. In a sense, like if you get an email that says, for your information only, you don't have to respond to it. Mm-hmm. What I noticed with those is how easy those were to read. If somebody is sending me a message, I have to, while I'm listening to the message, I have to plan what my response is. Mm-hmm. And that's one way of having a conversation. Another way is where somebody just gives me information. What I find is I will go into just focusing on what they're saying and not discounting anything of what they're saying. See, what women don't realize is that when men listen, because we're so wired up to act, whenever there's stress, we have to do something. So we're always having to figure out what's the most important thing to do, because you can only do one thing at a time.
That's one of men's limitations.
That's right. That's
men
right.
do not multitask,
That's right.
It's right there in their brain. It doesn't have the connecting tissue to the left and right brain, as you point out, that women do. So women can do four or five things at once. And men typically really like to do one big thing. And it reminds me of the difference between Dostoevsky and Tolstoy, as said one time by Isaiah Berlin, the great Oxford Don. He said, Tolstoy knew many small things, and Dostoevsky knew one big thing. It's like the fox and the hedgehog. Mm. One is a feminine way, and one is a masculine way. And women just can have a whole world of small things and tremendous complexity, and tuned in to all of them at the same time.
And that's the issue. That's a woman's vulnerability, is that when she's under stress, then she becomes overwhelmed with that expanded awareness that she has. But one point of clarification I like to make when we talk about multitasking and single tasking. Right now I'm watching you as a man talk to me, have my book in hand, check the sound levels, check the timing. Mm-hmm. So in one sense, you're doing complete multitasking. A woman would be doing the same thing, but the difference between us guys and a woman is she'd also be thinking about the anniversaries coming up, what she's going to wear, the kids need something, she promised somebody to write a note for them. That would all be going on at the same time while she's doing all of the things having to do with this. And that's the difference. Men can do a lot of things at once, but it's always pointed at one objective, one goal. And for women, they will be pointed in many directions at the same time. And when they're under stress, that becomes a liability for them. That becomes a source of huge unhappiness for women and problems. For men, our tendency to want to focus, that becomes our liability under stress. Because the more stressed we are, the more incapable we become of hearing another point of view. Literally, some men just shut off and they cannot even hear the points of view or recognize the other problems that might exist that might be getting bigger and bigger because he's just focusing on one thing. And I want to also point out, this is an amazing thing that I have just learned in terms of as my books became successful and whatever, because I'm so goal-driven to bring my message out to the world. And and when they started being on the bestseller list, I mean, for 6 years or something, Men Are From Mars was on the bestseller list. And every week the publisher would call me. And we're at dinner table and the kids are talking about their day and my wife's talking about her life. And I'm kind of waiting for my turn. My turn would always be, well, I got a call. I'm number one on the list. that would be all I had to say. Mm-hmm. And it was really very shallow. I mean, I realized that focusing on one thing is kind of like living your life in black and white. And as I've been able to connect with my wife more and see the world through her eyes, it has awakened me to an awareness of all the simple pleasures of life, the simplicity of life and the beauty of life that men don't even know they're missing because they're just focused on achieving that goal.
That's so beautifully said, and it reminds me of the heart-touching story of My Fair Lady with Rex Harrison and Audrey Hepburn, where at one point Professor Henry Higgins is the mentor, the Pygmalion, for the young woman played by Audrey Hepburn, and he says in frustration, having lived a bachelorhood for many, many years, he says, "Why can't a woman be like a man?" You know? And then you see that a whole world opens to him as his heart opens to this young woman who has been essentially his creation, his mentee. And then all of a sudden, he realizes that she has a wisdom and a knowledge about the world and places of the heart that are like a whole new territory for him. And by finally giving in and letting that happen, he discovers a richness to his experience that just simply wasn't there.
And that's exactly right. That's that richness which sees the value and is a aware of the little things of life, mm-hmm. as opposed to just focusing on the big things. And there's room for both those realities to exist. And I think through my connection with my wife, she's been the one who initiates me into that world again and again, because I can get so easily lost in just trying to climb that mountain and not think there's anything else to life.
And this gives, I think, a whole new appreciation of vive la différence. You know, it's not just about sexuality. It's not just about having a companion for comfort. It's about really interacting in a way that allows our soul to fulfill itself, as Jung himself would have said, in both its anima and its animus qualities, that each one of us has all of the masculine and all of the feminine potentia within us. We have different styles because of the nature of our physical hormones and our physical brain structure, but if we work together, we can have a whole world that includes everything and becomes this wonderful co-creative dance that we talked about with Shiva and Shakti at the beginning.
You know, Jung had sometimes very abstract, hard to make it practical for people, but I remember in reading his early works, or in my early development of this and reading Jung's work, he would talk about the masculine, for a man needing to have his masculine be the conscious part of him and the feminine to stay unconscious, but to be a part of him. And that when the feminine became the dominant aspect, he would become very weak and irritable and gloomy and dark. Mm-hmm. And whereas the woman, if she let her masculine side come forth as the dominant part, and then the feminine went unconscious, then she would become opinionated, that was, and rigid and inflexible and dominant in that way. And actually, I stopped talking about that, because when you talk about things, people just come up and become that way. But I started talking about what it looks like in terms of the practical version of this. And one of the things which is maybe for some people controversial, I think for people who've been around for a while, realize this is the next step for us to take. But in therapy, there was always the emphasis of the man opening up to his feelings. Mm-hmm. When we were saying we want men to open up to their feelings. Well, 25 years ago, I was quite a good expert at having men open up to their feelings. I could certainly do that. And then what I discovered is a few months later, their wives would come to me for a private session, and they say, "I hate to say this, but ever since he started opening up to his feelings, I didn't realize he had so many problems. I'm just not turned on to him anymore." And the women would say, other women would say, "He's so sensitive. I feel like I have to walk on eggshells around him. Everything hurts his feelings now. I liked it better before." Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like, be careful what you wish for kind of a phenomena, which is women were thinking, "I want this man to become feminine." Well, what happens is, and I would notice it, the more masculine a woman was in her balance, the more she wanted a man to be more feminine, in a sense, to balance him. But when she got this
To balance her.
Mm-hmm. But what she doesn't realize is that when she's around a man who's more feminine, it just makes her more masculine. Mm-hmm. And so she can't sustain the attraction to him. She experiences a frustration. And she doesn't know how to say, "I don't want to listen to you talk about your feelings." But she starts to feel really annoyed by it, because what she's needing is someone to help her come back to her feminine. So then I started, rather than having men open up to their feelings, I said, let's have men start making it safe for women to open up to their feelings. And what happened is for me in my own life, as well as for my clients and so forth, is the more men became better at listening and validating what a woman was going through, men naturally became more compassionate, more empathetic, more sensitive to the needs of others, and actually made men much stronger as opposed to weaker, which is if a man goes too much to his feminine, then it suddenly he becomes very narcissistic, and it becomes about, well, I'm not getting what I want and what I need. You want to talk, but I want to talk. And I saw this pettiness start to happen. I said, wait a second. Let's just set some guidelines here and see if they work. Let's let her do the talking about feelings, and you focus on listening, and then you don't talk for a day. And I have to say, my wife did this for me one time, and I'll tell you the story how I came across this. It's a wonderful story. So she's sharing with me. She was upset about a lot of things. She was overwhelmed, and I'm being a good therapist, good listener. I've learned to do that. So I listened, and I was actually kind of secretly timing it, and she talked for almost an hour, just nonstop. And I was like, all right, I understand that.
Tell me more.
And I say, tell me more. That's right. I was being like right there present, and occasionally I would rephrase back what she was saying, and until finally I said, now are you complete? Do you feel like there's anything you more want to say? She says, no, I'm complete. I said, and do you feel like I've heard you and reflecting back? And so what you're saying is this, and do you feel that that's correct? That's what you're feeling? She said, yes. And so then I said, all right, well, now that I've heard you, when would be a good time for you to listen to how I feel? And she said, and mind you, let me give the right preparation for this. While she was having her point of view, I was forming this whole counter argument. I mean, I was ready to go on trial, you know. Well, you say this, but that wasn't the case. And you say this, but what about this? And you want this, but have you thought about that? So there was, I was really defending myself secretly inside, but being a good listener as well. Then when I said, would this be a good time for me to talk about how I feel? She says, well, actually not. I was like, shocked. What? Gee, I can't talk. I just listened all that time. And she said, "She says I know it sounds unfair, but you've done such a good job listening. I just want to bask in the sunshine of your love." And I thought, okay, well, I can't argue with that. And maybe about 20% of my anger, frustration inside went away. Then over the next half an hour, she was making dinner. And she was really happy, and she was making dinner for me, and we were carrying on this conversation. It was as if I changed her whole day by listening to her. My rough feelings started softening. Then that night we made love, and that felt really great. And the next morning we woke up and she says, now what was that you wanted to tell me? And I said, nothing. It was all washed away.
Yeah, I could feel it. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It all just evaporated.
It all just evaporates. Yeah. And that's where I started to learn that most of the angst that men start to feel when women start being upset about things, we will compete with it. We'll sort of have this testosterone reflection of it. And we'll get all upset inside. But really, if we could just feel successful in washing away her stress, it will automatically wash away a man's stress. And I put this to practice quite effortlessly now, and it really works.
Beautifully said. And one of the things we might want to do now, as we're coming suddenly toward the end of this very stimulating dialogue, a lot of testosterone and oxytocin in the same dialogue, it's terrific, is maybe address the question of sexuality, because you've got a brilliant chapter in here about sex and how men and women respond differently to sex and why men, for instance, want to withdraw or maybe roll over and go to sleep and all of these kind of classical things that you talk about here. But from the lens that you approach it, they're illuminated in a whole new way. So maybe let's just unpack that.
Well, it's quite wonderful when you understand the hormonal side, and this has been this gradual understanding in science. But clearly, our desire to have sex arises, it will increase testosterone. So when I see my partner and she's interested in sex, I feel like I could have sex with her. My testosterone levels will go higher and higher and higher. And this will lower a man's stress levels. As a man continues to connect with a woman and feel love and friendship and closeness and affection and warmth, as a woman feels he's addressing her needs and she's addressing his needs, her oxytocin levels go up. Oxytocin is like the cuddle hormone, but it's also the orgasm hormone. As the oxytocin levels get higher and higher, it now allows in her body for her testosterone levels to increase as well. So her oxytocin's getting higher. She feels safe. She feels loved. She feels open. Her desire becomes a little bit more masculine, which is she's now sort of wanting the sex. Attention's building up. Then because the oxytocin has risen to the highest level, she's able to have climax, and it causes those little contractions. That's produced by huge amounts of oxytocin washing over her body, lowering her stress levels. Meanwhile, for the man, as he's entering into her and joining into her world, his oxytocin levels are get higher and higher as his testosterone's getting higher and higher. And then he reaches his sort of maximum point of ecstasy where oxytocin gets released, and that's what his climax is, and that's what causes the ejaculation, is oxytocin produces that process. And then right after it, with this huge dose of oxytocin, his testosterone levels drop. And literally, he can't do any more except roll over and go to sleep. And that's what happens is, I mean, to a certain extent, he can't do anything more. But his body is no longer the way it was a moment before. And with huge amounts of oxytocin, the bonding friendship hormone, lowers his testosterone, and now he has to recover his testosterone levels. So sometimes men need to go back to their house if they're dating her or something, or men go right to sleep if they're in bed with her. And women go, wait a second, what about, why don't we talk longer, or why don't we do it again, or why don't we share? Women are like ready for whatever because they've gotten this wonderful oxytocin, and that helps reveal to us one of the principles of too much oxytocin literally makes men sleepy because it will cause a man's testosterone levels to start to drop. And one of the easiest ways for men to recover testosterone is napping or sleeping.
And once this is seen, then, of course, all these sense of, oh, he doesn't care for me, or what was that all about, and now I want to share, and he's turned over, and he's indifferent, I'm feeling alone again.
Oh, you
all
know,
that,
if he falls asleep, it means he loves you a lot. I mean, this is the difference. If you take a rock star, take a rock star, a football star, they have sex with several women a night, and the next day they play even better. It used to be the coach said, don't have sex the night before. Mm-hmm. Well, that's don't have sex with someone you love. But these guys can have sex several, right back to back, again and again, with someone they don't love. Mm-hmm. It's more of a business arrangement, so to speak, or a groupie arrangement. And that doesn't cause their testosterone levels to drop. It's when a man makes love to someone he loves, then the oxytocin goes to a really high level, and that's what makes him sleepy. And so he's ready, he's out, he's done, he's finished. And the next day, the reason why the coaches would say don't have sex the night before was because the next day you don't have as much testosterone, so your desire to win is not as much, and you're thinking more along the lines of, hey, maybe we won't beat them too bad, and then they'll smash you.
Well, that's brilliant to see the falling asleep as a sense of deep, loving response
and
appreciation.
Absolutely.
And that's a total eye-opener for many people. And one of the things I think is really key here is you go on to say that regular and satisfying sex is one of the great gifts of a loving relationship. But to enjoy this gift for a lifetime, long after the newness wears off, men and women need to be creative in understanding how each of them responds, both physically, hormonally, with their brain chemistry, and so they don't misinterpret behaviors that actually are loving behaviors that might be seen as indifference or pulling away.
Yeah, even I'd like to expand on that, being someone who's lived through this. And not that many people have. A lot of people who've been married, been with their partners for 27 years, pretty much the passion's gone. And if people get older, often the passion becomes less. And what I've seen is when I fell in love with my wife the first time we're together, if she bumped into me, all roads lead to Rome and I get turned on. And there was this huge hot passion. Okay, this is very exciting.
This is what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, this is 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. So now, if she bumps into me, you know, it's like, oh, sorry, excuse me. I won't have that same reaction. But when we have a time and a place allocated, meaning that we're going towards the bedroom, after a few hugs, those things all get activated. And so it comes back. You just need to have a few more of the ideal circumstances for that to occur. And it will occur. And if it doesn't occur, don't think that that's just a part of aging or that's what happens. That's what happens when we don't know the skills to create enough distance and enough connection in order to have passion last. Why? I mean, I mentioned this earlier in the interview, but the day before, I had the best sex of my entire life. It's because I'd never been away from my wife for 2 weeks. And I've been away from her for 2 weeks, completely faithful in my mind. Now, this is another one of the techniques I teach. It's kind of an advanced technique for great passion. But if ever there's a thought of interest of sex over there, whatever, I allow that to be, but I bring my awareness back to a memory of the last time I had great sex with my wife. So I'm constantly bringing my attention back to my wife, back to my wife. So 2 weeks without having any sex, I came home and, wow, it was the best experience. Now, it reminds me of one time I did Larry King's show with Dear Abby, Abigail. Mm-hmm. And this is before she had died. And we were doing a show and Larry asked her, okay, Abby, what do you think is the secret of your marriage? And she'd been married like over 50 years or something, maybe 60 years, I think it was. And she said, well, the secret of my marriage is that my husband travels a lot. How do people interpret that? But I'm giving the right interpretation here, which is when couples are not always enmeshed, then there's room for them to be apart, particularly for the man when he's apart. That's when his testosterone levels will rise higher. And then he wants to come closer to join with her for his oxytocin levels to come back to that level. And that's what creates the ecstasy. But if men are too much bonded with their wives all the time, sort of enmeshed in her life, then his oxytocin levels will be high and it will keep his testosterone levels low. And that's why I explain, you know, my book, this little dance, which I often call the rubber band effect, which is men want to get close, then they want to pull away. And that pulling away is for a good reason. It's to rebuild testosterone. And once his testosterone's up, he'll spring back. So it's like a rubber band. He pulls away and he springs back. But when he pulls away, if a woman pursues him at that point, like, what are you feeling? What's the matter? Or I'll be nicer. I'll do whatever you want. Or she's sort of following him as he's pulling away further and further. He never gets a chance to fully spring or pull away and spring back. So I guess for me, it was 2 weeks away from my wife. I really sprung back to the maximum potential. So that's just an illustration of the need for distance as well as connection.
And I think that's beautifully put, because even right now, you and I are not engaged in a classical interview, but more in a dialogue. And I think what we're talking about in life itself and the interaction between Mars and Venus is not an interview or a serial interview, let's say, serial interviews. We're really talking about an ongoing dance and dialogue back and forth, where there are times when the sense of separation is created, as you illustrated before, by the man actually holding the space for the woman to be extraordinarily expressive, whether it's energetically in the Shakti dance kind of sense, or whether it's the dance of talking and expressing, and the man just holds the space with interest and focus to allow that to take place. There are other times when the man has come home from his great adventure, like Odysseus, and we have the Penelope effect, you know, where, tell me about your great adventure. And then he can actually talk about his day with great enthusiasm and so on. And she can hold the space. And so I think it's that real dialogue back and forth where the deep listening gives the evocation in the other of something that they're truly passionate about.
Wonderfully said.
And then they go back and forth. And
yes,
so
it is that dance.
It's that dance. And we've done it here together today as two men together, really appreciating each other and appreciating the depth of your wisdom here in this book. And I just want to say, John, this has been a really uniquely pleasurable time together. And I really want to express not only my appreciation, but to acknowledge the great work that you've done in taking these themes that you've lived out, beginning in your celibacy, and then you've experienced partnership, and you've experienced marriage, you've experienced children, and you have written, I think, with great clarity and a lightness that is enabling people to see themselves with the laughter of self-recognition, and then be encouraged that they can go forward and really make this work. And one of the things that we should talk about from that perspective is how people can connect with this beyond the book itself. The book itself, as we know, is called Why Mars and Venus Collide, Improving Relationships by Understanding How Men and Women Cope Differently with Stress. But beyond that, you have websites that maybe one or two you could mention.
Well, I have my MarsVenus.com website. It's a whole world. There's a lot on that website. Then I have another website, which is called MarsVenusWellness.com. And that is another world, which is it's like a internet TV show. So every week there's a new TV show on that website of me talking about relationships. And another world we didn't talk about today, we can only talk about so much, but it's the world of health.
Yes.
And, you know, gender-specific studies has been sort of my focus in life, and you can apply that to health. As a health researcher, there's lots of insights into how women's health is different from men's and what we can do to increase health in our life, because I think that's also an integral part to a good relationship, as is a good relationship is an integral part to lasting health.
And so the two websites that people could get started with would be?
MarsVenusWellness.com and MarsVenus.com.
Terrific. And now, in accordance with your book, I want to give you a chance to express your appreciation for our time together.
Well, I think this is wonderful, and I'm really glad that you're asking to do that, because you've contributed just as much. And so many times, men don't get the acknowledgement that they're needing and deserve. This is a fantastic interview. Like you said, this would be an exploration, a discovery process. And throughout this interview, I've been challenged to expand my awareness and think in a more enriched way. And I'm appreciative that you created a platform for me to share many of the ideas. Two is you really do your homework, and I appreciate that. And three, you enrich the whole interview by bringing forth your wealth of knowledge as a sharing together. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, John. That's really deeply meaningful and appreciated by me as well. And I'll just make one little suggestion as we go forward, that we look upon it as a dialogue, all of us in our life, rather than a series of interviews. One of the things that you've experienced, even on this book tour, is I'm only the second person that took enough interest in you and your book to actually read the book. And that's like life itself, you know, that we are busy, we are stressed, we are overwhelmed, people are trying to do their jobs. And in relationship, as you point out, if the partners can make time to pay attention to each other, the little things such as reading the book or, you know, taking a deeper level of interest, it all of a sudden opens up like a key, as you say, to communication and deep satisfaction on both sides that's right there at our fingertips if we simply make the time to do it. And for all the instructions, again, that you give in your book, and how should I put it, the very how-to practical things, a man solving a problem and helping other people, you know, realize their happiness.
I am a Mr. Fix-It.
No, it's just terrific. And I want to conclude here with one thing that occurred to me reading your book is the Dalai Lama. I quote him frequently in this way. He says, "All beings just want to be happy." And you say this in your book, all beings just want to be happy, men and women alike. But in understanding how they are happy and how they can make each other happy is a different method or a different way for each of them is where the key lies. That if we try to serve the other, the Venus, the Venusian, the one who lives on Venus, in a Mars way, which is what we want, it somehow doesn't work. And if they try to do to us the things that they want us to do to them, it doesn't work. But by understanding our differences and celebrating them, we can actually come together in this wonderful new way, and everyone can be happy. In fact, at the very end of your book, there's a phrase there. I think I marked it. Yes, here it is. You say, "We all want to be safe, happy, successful, and loved, but what we need to feel this way can be very different." And it's the Viva la Difference that we'll end this dialogue on that note. So once again, John Gray, thank you so much for making so many people be happy.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Real pleasure for me.
I'm your host, Duncan Campbell. I've been talking with John Gray, PhD, author of Why Mars and Venus Collide, Improving Relationships by Understanding How Men and Women Cope Differently with Stress. Be with us again next time on Living Dialogues. And visit us on my website, livingdialogues.com. That's living, DIALOGUES.com. And if you'd like to listen freely to additional archived visionary dialogues with myself and other transformational thinkers listed on my livingdialogues.com website, once you have entered your free subscription to the Living Dialogues podcast here on Personal Life Media, future Living Dialogues will automatically be downloaded to your computer on a weekly basis. Or simply browse through the list of programs here whenever you like, download them, or listen to them on your computer. Thanks again for your deep listening in evoking this program. All the very best. And stay tuned now after the music for some very interesting opportunities available to you as a listener to Living Dialogues.
Find more great shows like this on PersonalLifeMedia.com.